You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Everything's on the Table, a weekly program where we ask, what is the recipe for the future of food in New York City? Each week, we examine the food policies impacting our everyday lives and what hangs in the balance as New Yorkers go to the polls this fall. We'll look at what's happening now and what the next administration can do to support a healthier, more sustainable, and fair city.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You are listening to Everything's on the Table, and I'm Leah Eden, one of your co-hosts today. Every week on Everything on the Table, we distill topics like food initiatives for public health, how to deal with urban food waste, what our local government can do to end hunger in New York City, and much, much more. We'll base much of our conversations off the Food System Network's recipe for the future of food in New York City. I am very excited to introduce two of my co-hosts today. I am joined in the studio by Benjamin Solitaire and Mark Dunley. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
I'm going to give a little bit of background for both of you. Benjamin has spent many years working in the private sector as a corporate events producer before going back to school for public policy in 2008. Since then, he's done constituent services work for City Council members Gail Brewer, as well as Brad Lander. He's also served as the policy committee chair for the Brooklyn Food Coalition and on the Community Outreach Committee for the NYC Food and Farm Bill Working Group. He's also currently the treasurer of Food Systems Network NYC. Mark is the executive director of Hunger Action Network of NYC, for which he has worked since 1985 as the very first staff person. Very, very nice. He's a community organizer, a longtime anti-poverty, food justice, and peace advocate. He's the co-convener of the NYC Food and Farm Bill Group, and for the last 12 years, he's helped coordinate the Faith and Hunger Network with Bread for the World. He's an avid community gardener, a member of the Brooklyn Food Coalition, and co-host City Watch, a public affairs radio show on WBAI. But welcome to both of you. Thanks so much for having you guys in the studio.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Great. Well, Benjamin, we want to go ahead and dive right in. Why don't you introduce our first guests, and let's go ahead and get started.
Thank you. Oh, I'm very happy to have our first guest join us on the phone today. It's Nicholas Freudenberg. Hello, Nick.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks.
Good. Nicholas, if I got this right, you got your doctorate in public health from Columbia University in 1979. And I've had a distinguished career since then. I won't spend time going over every detail. We would never get to talk about anything else. But you are now the Distinguished Professor of Public Health at the CUNY Graduate Center and Hunter College. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So recently, what inspired us to ask you to be with us today is in August, just previous August, you were a co-author of a report that came out from Hunter, Jobs for a Healthier Diet and a Stronger Economy, Opportunities for Creating New Good Food Jobs in New York City. It is a comprehensive report. It is fascinating. I ran into a friend on the subway, I believe the day it came out. They handed me a copy of their copy, and I took it on the train from them and read it that day. It's quite comprehensive. You call for the creation of about 10,000 new good food jobs by 2020. In a number of sectors. Let me just start off with this question. Why this report and why now?
Yes, I think we folks working in public health and social services in New York see three interrelated problems. The first being not enough New Yorkers have jobs. We have a higher unemployment rate than the city as a whole, and of course it's low-income people who are most disadvantaged by unemployment. Second, we have a very large group of people, some estimated as a million or more, of New Yorkers who are food insecure or go hungry, something that makes it much harder for them to stay healthy and to achieve what they want to achieve. And third, we're really in the midst of an epidemic of diet-related diseases, high rates of child obesity, and very high rates of diabetes type 2 among adults. And each of these problems is a is preventing New Yorkers and the city from realizing its potential. And so we wanted to see if there was some way of addressing these three problems. And so we came up with the notion of creating good food jobs that would put people to work, make healthy food more available, and especially to those people who don't have enough good food or enough food. And we thought that this time of a mayoral election year, a time when the city is just in the kind of beginning to recover from this the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression, was an important time to be talking about these issues. And we hope a new administration will be committed to exploring some of these areas.
Now, Nick, unfortunately right now, many of the jobs in the food economy in New York City are actually among the lowest paying jobs and often with not particularly good working conditions. Could you maybe define, you know, for our listeners what you mean by good food jobs and what are some of the, you know, perhaps standards or enforcement mechanisms you would put in to ensure that, in fact, we are creating good food jobs?
Sure, and I think that's a very important point. There are about 330,000 jobs in the food sector, and the reason that we looked at this sector is it's a relatively fast-growing sector compared to some others. There was about a 33% increase over the last decade in food jobs in New York City, and also it's one of the few sectors where people with limited education, people coming from other countries, can still find work. So that makes it a good sector to grow and develop. But as you said, it's also a sector where many of the people working don't have what they need to be able to succeed in supporting themselves and their families. So we define good food jobs as meeting four requirements. First, it's jobs that produce and distribute affordable food that promotes health and reduces hunger and food insecurity. So they're jobs that make healthier food, not the food that contributes to some of the other problems. Second, good food jobs pay workers a living wage and fair benefits. Third, they provide safe working conditions and adequate training so that workers can do what they're expected to do. And finally, good food jobs protect the environment and use sustainable practices. Now, in the writing this report, we looked at a whole variety of projects in New York City and around the country that are working in this area, and not every one of those projects adequately meets all four of these standards. And so our recommendations and what we're hoping for is to move in the right direction so that some food jobs are now prepare healthy food, perhaps, but don't pay a living wage. So the work there has to be to, you know, improve working conditions. Others jobs, food producing food, are actually better paying, better wages. But sometimes what those people are producing is healthy food, sometimes not. And so we're looking to move things in the direction in all these four domains.
It's a hard topic. It's covered so many bases. In the last 10 years or so, given whatever time frame, what would you think some of the changes that have happened over the last 10 years, for the better or worse, and where do you think it is today? I mean, is it better today than it was?
Well, there's good news and bad news. There's some more jobs. You know, the number of jobs in restaurants has grown about 44% in the last 10 years in New York City. The jobs in retail have grown. There's actually been a decline in the jobs in food manufacturing. There's been a slight increase in jobs in the sort of wholesale food sector. If we look at wages, wages have actually gone down, in part as a result of the economic crisis of 2008. in several of those sectors, but have stayed about the same in the food manufacturing and some of these other sectors where there's more promise. So we need to look at both the number of jobs and the actual wages they're paying.
So your report, we probably have time for one last question before we go to a break, but your report outlined various strategies for creating good jobs, good food jobs. What strategies do you hope the next mayoral administration prioritize, you know, top two or three?
Yes. Well, we're proposing for the next administration put together a partnership that could create 10,000 new good food jobs in New York by 2020. And I'll mention just three of the six or seven strategies we propose. First, we propose expanding the school food program, the school lunch and breakfast program. And if you, there are many children who are eligible for that program who aren't enrolled. And if you enroll more children, you need to hire more folks to prepare those meals. And if you in turn train those school food cooks to prepare healthier food, to prepare more food from scratch, to cut salt, sugar, fat, then you're improving health and you're also creating jobs, which happen to be union jobs and therefore quite good jobs. Another proposal we're making is to create a healthy food truck and food vendor project for the city. In many cities in other parts of the country, Los Angeles, for example, food trucks are bringing, starting to bring healthier food to many neighborhoods that don't have access to healthy food, both prepared food and fresh food. And so we think the city could streamline some of the regulations, provide training, and help people to get into it. And third, we're proposing that the city expand the small number of food incubators, places where people who want to start a food business can go, both to get some skills, but also to prepare food that they can then take to sell to institutions. And we believe strategies like that, if they have the full attention of city government, labor unions, workforce development programs, can start to see the increase in numbers that will really make this a more vibrant, dynamic sector that contributes both to economic development and health.
Great. Well, that certainly gives the city and the next mayor quite a bit to think about. Nick, thank you so much for being with us. I know we'll come back to you in a moment, but we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we've been talking a lot about this idea of good food jobs. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the people who are working along the food chain.
You're listening to Set Back by Sleepies on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Each week on Everything's on the Table, the Heritage Radio Network shines a spotlight on the organizations we love and support. The Food Pantry at LSA Family Health Service, also known as the Little Sisters, serves East Harlem and El Barrio families as part of their holistic, multi-service approach to improving the health and well-being of the most vulnerable. And that means that LSA provides not only basic, essential food staples at their client choice, supermarket-style pantry, they also engage families in optimizing their own health and nutrition. Through cooking demos by their community chef, Lucia Bravo, and community cook shop nutrition education classes, or by bringing fresh, farm-to-table local produce to families, thanks to their local produce link, Just Food, United Way, and Food Bank partners, LSA's Food Pantry teaches struggling families how to plan and prepare healthy recipes that will enrich, sustain, and strengthen them. Find out more about them at www.littlesistersfamily.org.
Great. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Everything's on the Table on heritageradionetwork.org. This week, we are continuing our conversation with a look at the economy and good food jobs. And Mark, why don't you go ahead and introduce our next two guests that have joined us here in the studio?
Well, we're going to be talking now with some of the representatives of workers in the food economy here in New York City. We'll be talking with Carolina Pertillo, who is originally from El Salvador, but has been working at least the last 5 years or so in the food service restaurant business here in New York City. And she's also involved, as is Diana Robinson, with the food chain Workers Alliance. I first met Diana a number of years ago when she was working at Local 1500 with the United Food Commercial Workers Union. She was active, I guess, at that point as well as with the Alliance. And she also been involved as a food policy coordinator of the Building Blocks Project for Good Food, Good Jobs, and Good Health. And perhaps most importantly, she's a member of the Brooklyn Food Coalition Governing Board here in Brooklyn, one of the prime organizations working on food policy. But Diana, maybe you could give us an explanation of what is the Food Chain Workers Alliance and what are some of the issues you're working on?
Sure. So the Food Chain Workers Alliance is a national coalition of worker centers, unions, and food advocates advocating for workers along the food chain. Currently, we have 21 members across the country. And really what we're advocating for is better wages for food workers and also better working conditions for food workers. We saw this large interest in food. People were very interested in food, where their food came from, was it organic? So now we just want people to take a step further and think about, well, is the worker that picked my apple being paid properly? Is he working or is she working under safe conditions?
That's great. Well, talking about working under safe conditions, I'd like to go to Carolina about your experience. If you could tell us how you got into the business and some of your thoughts on being a restaurant worker in New York City.
Well, hi, everybody. Well, I got in the restaurant business because I was before working in a cafeteria, making like $7.25, the minimum wage. So, of course, it's not enough. So I thought working as a service, I will make a little more money. That's how I got in the restaurant.
All right. So you mentioned when we were talking earlier about why people don't consider restaurant work a real job. Could you talk about that a little more and explain that to our listeners?
Oh, I hate that. Actually, it's a question for everybody, for you guys too, because I don't understand why when we ask for benefits or for a better pay, even managers sometimes tell us, like, just get a real job. So I don't understand the American concept, the world where difference. I don't understand.
Yeah,
we don't work harder. I mean, I think everybody works hard. It's just a different activity that we do, different things. But everybody works harder. Like, I cannot say that I work harder than the dishwasher. I think sometimes they do work harder than us, than service, and they actually make less than us. So I don't understand.
Yeah, there's this large misconception about food workers in general. A lot of times people who work at restaurants or fast food restaurants, there's this conception that they're teenagers, that they're transient, that this is just a job to hold them over until they start their real career. But the reality is that most people who work in these industries are in the industries for their entire life. It's a career. There's people in the industry for over 20 years. This is how they raise their families. So it is a real job and it's a hard job. And that's why people like Carolina and her coworkers are fighting to improve conditions in the industry.
One of the issues my organization, Hunger Action Network, had worked on recently was raising the state minimum wage, which unfortunately did not include, excluded tip workers, particularly in the food service industry. But afterwards, I met with some of the organizations representing low-income workers, and they explained to me why they weren't celebrating as much as one would expect, particularly because the reality is a lot of times people don't even get paid the minimum wage. There's the whole problem of wage theft and don't give you overtime hours. But Carolina, perhaps could you explain, you know, what are some of the challenges that workers in the food industry face that perhaps the average person doesn't comprehend?
I think it's the lack of benefits, first. We don't get any paid sick days. we don't get any personal days or overtime. And most of the people in restaurant works, they have two jobs or three jobs. I mean, it's just not enough. People in the kitchen, they make like $9 an hour. So most of them, I see them start their job day at 6 in the morning and until 2, 3 o'clock, and they run. I had to run for the second job. So I think it's still like the benefits. It's nobody making enough money just with one job.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add something. And it's no coincidence that most of the workers in our food system are people of color and immigrants, and they're highly exploited, like Mark mentioned, where there's wage theft. Something that people may not know about restaurant workers is that they earn a different wage. They earn something that's known as the tip minimum wage, which federally is $2.13. And I'll say it again, $2.13, and hasn't been raised in over 20 years. In New York, the tip minimum wage is $5 an hour. So there is this whole sub-minimum wage set for tipped workers, which also impacts their livelihood, right? A lot of people don't like leaving tips when they go out to eat. They feel like, why should I subsidize an employer's employees? But the reality is, this is what people are living off of.
I would like to follow up. You, Carolina, are active in the food rights workers' rights movement. What drove you to become active, and what do you do in that role?
Well, I first got involved in ROC, Restaurant Opportunity Centers, because my first job as a waitress, I was lucky and I got paid sick days and some benefits. And I thought that was the reality of everybody. But then I left that job and I found another one, and then I realized I didn't have any benefits, so I thought that must be illegal. So I tried reaching in Google, and then I find out there isn't any law that make the employer give us benefits. So I was in shock. I remember I called my father in El Salvador, and I was, Dad, we don't have benefits in this country. I mean, I thought that he was perfect, and he was like, nope. And that's how I got involved, because through online, I found the ROC. They were working in a paid sick campaign, so I decided to join them.
So I'd like to ask Diana a question. Recently, the Food Chain Workers Alliance produced a report, The Hands That Feed Us. And perhaps could you describe what are some of the implications, both for New York City, but also for the next mayoral administration?
Yeah, so in June of 2012, we released an unprecedented report, The Hands That Feed Us, Challenges and Opportunities for Workers Along the Food Chain. And that really, we surveyed over 600 workers across the U.S., across the food chain, to find out, you know, what were they earning, what were the conditions they faced. And we found that 86% of workers earned a low or poverty wage, and that 79% of them did not have access to paid sick days or didn't know if they had paid sick days, and 53% of them reported working while sick. So I think this has a lot of implications, because we've seen in New York the paid sick days campaign, which a law was passed, but it lacks it excludes some workers, which in particular are restaurant workers that are excluded. But I think what we really are looking for the next mayor of New York City to do is to include all workers in paid sick days, for there not to be any exclusions for workers, and all workers to be covered under the paid sick days bill. In addition to that, we're looking for the mayor to also introduce a minimum wage for New York State, so that we're not under the federal minimum wage, for New York State to have its own minimum wage. And hopefully, and this is a campaign that the Restaurant Opportunity Center of New York has started, is to abolish the tip minimum wage, that all workers should make the same wage.
I just want to follow up on your comment about paying workers in the food industry for sick days. And I think I saw one of your videos a while back. Say you're a middle-class person out there. You know, perhaps you may not want the person who's serving your food to, you know, have a cold or other disease that they are spraying over your salad.
Yeah, so we've seen like this outbreak in foodborne illnesses, and this has a lot to do with the access that workers have to these things like paid sick days, not only in the restaurant industry, but even in our poultry processing industry, where workers are on lines and they're sick and they have to go to work sick. In addition to that, sometimes workers are forced to wear diapers on the line, where they have to go to the bathroom themselves because they're not allowed to get off the line. So this is a public health concern as well. Because this affects all of us. No one wants to get sick. We saw in North Carolina, in Fayetteville, North Carolina, at an Olive Garden, a woman had hepatitis A. She couldn't take a day off. 3,000 people then had to be tested for hepatitis A because of that. So it's just, to me, it makes common sense that all people should have access to paid sick days. We shouldn't be enabling spreading disease, right?
You obviously work with a lot of organizations. We've led a couple in the intro. How has that changed in the last couple of years in the work you've done? You have a lot more support. Is it?
Yeah. So when we started in our dream, right, when this alliance formed, all our different organizations were working with different workers throughout the food chain, but they were siloed, right? Restaurant workers, food processing workers. But then we saw the opportunity to come together and really make policy changes that affected all food workers and building this identity of a food worker. Whether I work on a farm, whether I work at a restaurant, whether I'm in a slaughtering house, I'm a food worker. And I think that's helped us a lot in bringing consciousness to what's happening with workers. And I think the support has grown a lot. Currently, we have a petition to raise the minimum wage. Federally, there is a bill that was introduced, the Fair Minimum Wage Act of 2013, that would raise the minimum wage to $10.10 and then would raise the tip minimum wage to 70% of that. So it's huge. It's really important. And we've gotten support from a lot of food organizations that historically labor and a lot of the food movement organizations haven't been aligned. But we've been doing a lot of work to bring those two groups together and to make it clear that a sustainable food movement is one that includes the voices of the workers who produce our food.
If I could ask a follow-up question to Carolina, or a two-part question. You had mentioned, or we had mentioned, you had came originally from El Salvador. You know, how many workers are in the food system are perhaps afraid to stand up and advocate for their rights because of possible concerns of trying to deal with documentation type issues? And in sort of a related question, do you get a sense of support from other people in society for the rights of food workers, or do they see them, oh, they're different from us?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a lot of people don't ask or don't feel they have the right for a better work condition. It's sometimes they don't have documents. But I also see a lot of people who's like legal or even Americans, they just assume I was in shock. They just assume when I talked with them and I'm like, we can change this. They're like, no, this is a restaurant. That's the way it has to be. That's the way it is. That's the way it will be. So they just assume this. That's the only way. I think we have to change that, like switch their mind, like, no, we can make some changes. So it will be great that we have more support from the customers too. Most of the people, I think, they think that we service, probably we make a lot of money. If we would like really show them that it's not like that, probably they will were willing to help, support our cause. I think. And also, like Diane said, people now is really care about organic food and healthy issues. So it will be great that people who had that conscience, it will be also like take our size. Like, okay, I care about how this cow was killed. I care about the chicken. It will be nice, and I don't know how, but thanks God Diane is working on that. Like, may aware of those people. I think that would be great because they already have some kind of sensitive, so we need just to make them show them the way.
And I think what's been really great is that we've seen like this flurry of workers just rising up and like letting people know this is what's happening in my workplace, whether it's a worker at McDonald's or a worker at a fine dining restaurant like Capital Grille restaurant. Like they're standing up, taking action and letting people know what's going on. So I think, as Carolina said, there needs to be a lot more education. People need to know and be aware of what's happening and to know that you're responsible too. Like when you go out to eat, as a consumer, you're responsible to know what's going on in that workplace, and we should all be held accountable to that.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really important point, that as consumers, we think about, we care about the well-being of the food that we're eating. We should, of course, also care about the well-being of the people that are making, producing, and serving that food. So thank you. This has been a really... really kind of brought to light the food worker experience. And I want to thank you guys both for being here. We're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to try to wrap up some of these challenging issues in a little bit of a bow and think about what the next mayor can do to address some of these issues around the economy and the people that are working in our food system. So stay tuned in. We will be right back.
You're listening to Seriously by Sleepies on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I take this all very seriously. Get outside. Last night, but no one remembers. It's just a fucking job.
Each week on Everything's on the Table, the Heritage Radio Network shines a spotlight on the organizations we love and support.
More than 47 million Americans rely on SNAP, the program known formerly as food stamps, to keep food on the table. SNAP is also a fast and effective economic stimulus, benefiting every link of the food chain. Decisions made in Washington between now and November will determine whether cuts to SNAP will create hardships for low-income Americans and plunge our nation off a looming hunger cliff. Food Bank for New York City, in partnership with organizations across the country, is speaking out against devastating cuts to SNAP through the project Hunger Cliff. Interested in adding your voice to these efforts to protect SNAP benefits? Visit hungercliff.org for information, resources, and ways to act now.
Great. Well, welcome back. You are still listening to Everything's on the Table on the Heritage Radio Network. We've talked a lot about good food jobs and food worker issues. And Benjamin, I was hoping you could kind of take us to the next step and talk about where we all see some of these issues going as we think about bringing in a new mayor, and where are some of the success stories that we've all experienced in this sector?
Yeah, this has been a great discussion. We're joined again. Nick, you're still with us?
I am.
You got to hear in here to our last discussion. So we're going to have all three of you chime in as we move through this segment. We've had some great policy ideas from Nick about what good food jobs are and how to school food and food vending trucks and other ideas how to increase those jobs. We've heard some of the trials of being a restaurant worker. I think what I'd like to hear is, as Leah said, there's a lot of sectors involved here. It's a broad industry. But in your report, Nick, you talk about some very specific people and jobs and places. So what are some of the successes that you think would be a good role model or model for the next mayor to look at or to duplicate?
Well, I think, first of all, there have been a lot of advances in food policy during the Bloomberg administration, and so I think we ought to give them credit. But what we should be looking for in the next administration is to expand and extend some of those improvements and address some of the issues that have not been adequately addressed. There is a small office for a food policy coordinator in the mayor's office, and I think we need a broader responsibility for food because it does, as you said, cut across so many different sectors. I think we need people from workforce development. We need people from universities. At City University alone, we have several thousand students who are in everything from associate degree programs to doctoral degree programs studying food and nutrition. And we need a more coordinated effort to ensure that the workforce with the skills is being trained, but also that the jobs that require those skills are being supported. I think that a mayor can use the resources of city government to pull together some of the key players in creating good food jobs.
Excellent. You know, I think that, as Carolina was pointing out before, we are very well aware of what we eat, and we care about how our chickens are and cows are treated. And it is time to care about how the workers are treated. And so, Diana, in that respect, is that getting better? I mean, Carolina may not think so, but we'll get back. But Diana, what do you think?
I think it is getting better. I think people are a lot more knowledgeable. You know, it's almost going to be 2 years in February that I came on to the staff of the Food Chain Workers Alliance, and I have seen a lot more awareness about workers. And the reality is that people don't know, because I give presentations and talks, and people are like, I really never thought of that. So I think the education piece is really important. But I think one really great example of how we can do that, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers has really been able to engage consumers and make them responsible and make them take action to confront these big corporations like Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, McDonald's. And they all have signed on to these fair food agreements where they agreed to pay a penny more per pound to the workers who pick their tomatoes. Here in New York City, Brand Workers International, an organization that represents workers in food processing throughout New York City, has also been able to do that, engaging consumers to boycott places that are, you know, violating workers' rights and putting pressure by also having companies stop buying products from these processors if they don't make changes to their labor practices. So I think there is a lot of awareness, and that if we continue to engage people, we can definitely bring a lot more change about.
I don't know, Carolina, do you have anything you wanted to share?
I would like to ask the consumers to be more aware and help, like, not only restaurant workers, like people who work in the farms. Me, just be more aware where you put your money. I mean, because it really counts.
Okay. Now
if I can make an analogy, I think there's a lot to learn from the healthcare sector. And in the 1960s and 70s, healthcare workers faced some of the same challenges that food sector workers are facing now. Low wages, no benefits, poor working conditions. And over a period of a decade or so, healthcare workers at all levels were able to organize, were able to improve both working conditions, and what we saw as a result of that was dramatic improvements in patient care and in patient satisfaction with their care. And I think what we need to see in the food sector is a stronger understanding is that the interests of consumers and the interests of workers in having safe, healthy food and workers who are paid adequate wages, we're all in this together. It's one, you know, it's one food system, it's one economy. And we saw in other sectors that we were able to make those improvements and everybody benefited. It didn't put the healthcare sector out of business. They were able actually to do better. So we need to see what we can learn from that experience and apply to food.
Now, we're about a month out to the mayoral election. And so isn't it, ask in general if any of the mayoral candidates, and it's actually, I think, 18 of them, believe it or not, have been particularly forceful in speaking out on this particular issue. But one issue and concern I'll raise, ask to see if there's been any movement from the mayoral candidates, is, you know, how the city uses its leverage to improve working conditions, whether that's the living wage law, whether that's the sick leave law, whether that's the zone-in powers under the FRESH program to actually improve working standards. There's been some movement, but often it seems like it takes a lot of work, and then at the last moment, a lot of workers get excluded. So have the mayors spoken in general to food workers or the economy, and particularly how aggressive are they willing to use their leverage to improve working conditions?
Well, I think one of our members, brand workers that I mentioned before, that organizes food processing workers in New York City, they were able actually to get a code of conduct passed to an EDC and Goldman Sachs loan fund that would go to food manufacturing businesses. And I think that was a great victory, because it would be seen like if this employer had violated some kind of laws, they shouldn't be able to receive this loan. So I think they have had conversations with elected officials and have gotten a lot of support about that. But they're also looking to make it more transparent to see who are the companies who are receiving this money. So that's one of their fights that they're having right now. And I think that, you know, they have been able to engage these elected officials and to have them participate in promoting that. I think that's a really important part of subsidies and loans, ensuring that standards are added to that, whether it's standards in terms of the kind of food that's procured, but also the labor standards for the workers who work for those companies who are supplying food, whether it's school food or other kind of institutions. I think it's really important to add these kind of standards to those kind of policies.
I agree. The current administration has developed the New York City Food Standards, which specify the nutritional quality of food served in city programs and schools and hospitals and jails and senior centers and child care centers. And each year the city spends, we estimate, you know, somewhere between $500 and $600 million on the food that's served in city institutions. But to date, there are not labor standards or wage standards for how that money is spent, and that would certainly be a step forward, that as well as nutritional standards, there were working conditions and wage and benefit standards.
Well, you know, I know a lot of reports get written and a lot of reports get read and then placed on a shelf. So hopefully this report is not going to have that happen to it. I know we didn't know when we booked you both, Diana and Nick, you guys are doing an event together soon. So Nick, I'd like, or Diana, to talk about that. And what is the future? What is the next step for you guys?
Well, the New York City Food Policy Center is having a forum called Growing Good Food Jobs in New York City. And Diana and I and some other people will be speaking about this issue. It's at 8:30 in the morning at the CUNY School of Public Health on 119th Street and 3rd Avenue. And we really think there needs to be a dialogue among all the constituencies that need to be involved in addressing the issues facing our food sector. And we hope to begin that dialogue where we have some speakers, but we're also hoping a wide variety of food workers, people concerned about nutrition and hunger, come and express their point of view so that we can develop some very specific proposals for the next mayoral administration.
Yeah, and for the Food Chain Workers Alliance, in terms of next steps, we have some really exciting projects that are coming up. We have a video that's going to premiere on October 24th, which I believe is U.S. Food Day, about food workers, and it's a really cool concept. It's a family sitting around having breakfast, getting ready for work and school, and the child asks, "Where does this food come from? Where does this food come from?" And then you see all the workers involved in bringing that food to your table. So stay tuned for that. You can check in on our website, foodchainworkers.org, to get to see that. In November, we'll have our second annual International Food Workers Week, where there's a bunch of actions that people can participate in or do your own actions or events, which is video screenings, things about food workers. Since it's a time that we're thinking about food, we're thankful it's Thanksgiving. So also to think a little deeper and think about that worker or that food worker that grew your food or served you your food or sold you your food at your local supermarket.
If I could ask one more question of Carolina. Just you're the reason we're here, people like you and jobs like you. In a quick answer, what would you like to see in the next few months or a year?
A month or years? I would like to all the restaurant workers have real paid sick days, because the law that you just passed, it gives you this option to sweep shift. So basically, it's not paid sick days. So I would like to get that changed. I don't know if we can do it in a year. And also, I would love to get rid of the $5 New York City of minimum wage and just have regular minimum wage. It will be $7.25.
There are seven states that have done that, including California.
I heard that. So there is hope. There is hope. So that's I would like to see you probably in a year. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, well, thank you all. It sounds like although there's a lot of very serious issues and challenges that we've been discussing, there are some really nice bright spots and some hope and some really fantastic successes. So I want to thank you all for kind of bringing both the challenges as well as the positive things to light here. So I want to thank, you know, Nick and Carolina and Diana. Thank you so much for being here in the studio and by phone. It's a really important conversation, and it certainly isn't over. If all of our listeners want to learn a little bit more about some of the great organizations that we've discussed today, you can find them at www.foodchainworkers.org. Also take a look for Restaurant Opportunity Center, that's R-O-C-N-Y, and you can find out more about Nick at suny.edu. Find out a little bit more about that event and some of the great work that these organizations are doing. Big thanks to our co-hosts today, Benjamin Solitaire and Mark Dunley, as well as our co-producers of Everything's on the Table, Caitlin Salemi and Michael Addison from the Food Systems Network of NYC. Be sure to tune in next week to Everything's on the Table, where we're going to take a really deep look at issues around public health and food. This episode, like all of our 30 live weekly shows, are available for free on our website, as well as iTunes, Stitcher. And please, if you believe in what we're doing, consider becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click that donate button right this minute. Thank you so much for listening in, and keep coming back.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.